Hey, Parshas Mikay, quick overview. We're told we're in the year 2229 from creation. Yosef has been in jail for 12 years. Baro has two dreams, one about seven fat cows and seven lean cows, with the lean cows devouring the fat and showing no difference. The same thing happening with a lousy sheave of wheat swallowing a good one. And Paro is troubled. And we're told by Chazal that Paro is really troubled. And he asked everybody, what's the meaning? And no people gave him answers. You'll have seven new daughters who will die. You'll have seven horses that'll, you know, whatever. And he accepted none of them. Because it seems he dreamt the meaning as well, but he forgot it. God let him see the meaning so that when he would hear what the reality that somebody told him was actual, he would recognize it. And it says Paro was getting more and more and more despondent because the royal wine steward had no intention really of telling him about Yosef, but people were getting afraid that if Paro loses it, he's apt to start executing his officers, you know, out of frustration, because maybe that will appease his Meshuggah gods. So finally, right, the wine steward says, okay, I remember. I'm going to remember my sin. This is a statement that I've heard used by Rabbi Wein Shlita oftentimes when he says, I started off as a lawyer before I came a rabbi, and he says, that was my sin. Because he always says that when he was young, Rav Herzog, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, came to his class and challenged the kids after, he says, the Holocaust happened, what are you all going to do for Kol Yisroel? But that's another story. So he says he says that Yosef is this kid and he's a prisoner and he's a Hebrew. Like, he's trying to detract from any possible type of positive attribute Paro would see, saying, look, if you talk to this guy, you're talking to the scum of the earth. Okay. Paro has him taken out of the jail. And Paro says to Yosef, I hear you can interpret dreams. And Yosef says, Biladai, it's not me. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can interpret Paro's dreams. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu can use whomever he wishes to serve as his shliach, as his messenger. Right? And it says, he tells Paro the dream, right? And Paro is wiser than of many others. And what he would do is he would say, I saw seven cows come out of the Nile, and they had seven calves behind them. And Yosef would say, you didn't see that. That's not what you really saw. And Paro would say, wow, how does he know? And then Paro would start again, and he said, and then I saw seven cows that started off being mediumly heavy, and they waned. And he says, you didn't see that. You saw seven lean cows. And after a couple of times, Paro says, okay, he knows, I can't, you know, I can't fool him. So he tells him what the dream is. And Yosef tells him that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving Paro a route map to what's going to happen in the next 14 years. And what's going to happen is that there will be 7 years of tremendous plenty, followed by 7 years of severe famine, where no one will ever know that there had been years of plenty because the famine will be so severe. And they look at Yosef, and Yosef says, the obvious answer is you need to take somebody who has administrative skills, put him in charge to make sure there's enough of a conservation effort in the 7 years of plenty to have food for the later years. And it says, Paro realizes that he's got something special here. And he says, I want this person to take up the job of viceroy. There's no one I know who seems to have as much wisdom and as much talent as he. So what they do is they say that, says that the ministers say, no, so you can't do that. And the power says, what do you mean? I'm the king. They say, no, we have a constitution, right? Like a demitard. We have a constitution that says, unless someone can speak 70 languages, all of them, the ones that God created, right, after the fall of the Tower of Babel, he can't be the viceroy. So Paro says, okay, I'll test him tomorrow. And it says that one of the malachim came and taught Yosef all the languages that night. And if we think about it, right, that's got to be a tremendous nace to learn that, to have that type of knowledge, inserted,
yeah,
absorbed,
yeah,
by you. That to do that, right, it says that there was one language that he needed particular help with, and I can't remember which one that was, and it says the next day Paro starts. Paro talks to him in Armenian, and he answers in Armenian. Paro talks to him in Babylonian, and Yosef comes right back. And Paro goes ahead and talks to Yosef in all 70 languages with the people presumably watching, and they see he knows them all. And then Yosef does something. He then talks to Paro b'Loshon HaKodesh. He talks to him b'Ivrit, in Hebrew. And Paro says, basically, what is that? And he says, that's Hebrew. That's the other language. And Paro says, I don't know it. And you've got to swear to me that you will never, ever tell anyone that I don't know this. And we'll see later on that that this shvua that Yosef had to make to Paro becomes instrumental later in Jewish history as to what happens. So after these incidents, Yosef becomes the viceroy, the number two to the king in Paro, and he puts into effect the plan he lays out. Now, it says that he gave him a name, Sofnas Paneach, and it says that what they did is they took Yosef and they put him on a royal chariot, and they paraded him, right, through the streets of the capital so that everyone would know who was now going to be number two in the kingdom. In other words, but who would be effectively, right, the chief operating officer. It says that as Yosef, as we know, was exceedingly handsome, and it says that the young ladies who saw him, when they saw him pass, they would throw jewelry at him. They wanted to try to catch his attention, because maybe, you know, he'd be interested if he took a gaze at them. And it says he didn't look until he gets a piece of jewelry tossed at him, and he sees, hold on, this thing says, the bearer of this chain is a granddaughter of Yaakov Avinu. She's a daughter of Dinah Bas Yaakov. He sees that and he looks up and he sees it's Osnas. Osnas was the adopted daughter of his paramour who tried to basically, you know, seduce him, and Potiphar. And Potiphar decides the best way to show everybody that he really had nothing against Yosef. He only kept him in jail for 12 years, right? Is that he let him marry his daughter. And who did he marry? He ends up marrying his niece. And it says that in the years of plenty, they have two sons, Menashe and Ephraim. And when we stop to think, we realize that Ephraim and Menashe are, while they're Yosef's children, they also come both from Rachel and Leah. And as we always say, that Jewish history is stranger than fiction in many ways. So, it says they get married. Yosef goes ahead and puts his plan in action. 7 years of fullness of, right, occur. Yosef sets up storage cities, right? And the 7 years pass. Yosef has no contact with his family at this stage of the game back in Canaan. So it's now been 19. He was in jail for 12, and 7 years is 19. So there's been no communication. Yaakov hasn't sent any messengers to Egypt to find out if he's there. And many Chazal say Yosef probably wondered, did they all give up on him? In other words, if I don't hear, if nobody comes after me, right? Dina was held by Shechem, and they immediately mounted a force to get her back. And here I'm gone for, you know, such a long time, and there's nothing. So that had to be on his mind.
But jealousy?
Huh?
Are you jealous?
I don't know about jealous, but disappointed would likely be a better word. You know, like, why? You know, why has this happened that, you know, he knows that his brothers, or maybe, so the only thing he can assume, right, maybe he assumes that his brothers thought he was actually killed. That if we go with the story we read, it says that the Midianim took him out of the well, right, before anybody knew, so maybe they had no idea what really happened to him. Because it says Reuven came back and he's not there.
And they were the ones who put them.
Well, they put him in.
Anyway,
They threw him into the well. But the question is, did they actually sell him? And there are many Mefarshim who say they had it in mind, but they didn't get to do it. The Midianim, while they were eating lunch, the Midianim came, took him out. And in so doing, they avoided them having the problem of having to sell him. The Midianim sold him to the Ishmaelim, and the Ishmaelim then turned around and brought him to Mitzrayim. So Yosef doesn't know what they thought. He didn't know if they basically gave up and said, okay, he's gone. Or pragmatically, could he be gone because nobody ever got out of Mitzrayim? You know, once a foreigner came in, it was the end of it. You became a slave and basically you died. You were tormented. So we know that what happens is that the 7 years of famine begin. And in those 7 years, there's tremendous, tremendous deprivation of food everywhere. And we're told that Yaakov says to his sons at some stage, Lama teach Ra'u, why are you looking? We got to do something about food. And so he says to his 10 sons, without Binyamin, you've got to go down, because we hear Yet Shever B'Mitzrayim. There is, in fact, grain available in Mitzrayim, and go down there. And we're told that Yosef has a premonition that maybe his brothers will have to come down to Mitzrayim, because where are they going to get food? So Yaakov seemed to indicate they had other things other than wheat they might have subsided on, but because everyone else in Canaan was going down, he didn't want to stand out as an, okay, somehow we have this special merit that we have certain provisions. So Yaakov sends his sons down to Mitzrayim. Yosef has set up with Menashe, who he's made in charge of looking at people coming in. He's told them what to look for. And even though the brothers come in through 10 different gates, right? They are so distinctly different in appearance, presumably so much better looking, whatever their aura was, that they were noticed. And what happens is they get brought to Yosef, and Yosef starts his ruse. He's going to test them. Have they, in effect, done any sort of tshuva for having sold him or not? Right? And it says that what happens is he eats with them, and it says when they eat at the, when they sit down at the dinner, he says to them, okay, I'm going to tell you how to sit. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, and they blows their mind. He knows exactly the order of the Shvatim. They can't figure it out. He tells them he's a great magician. And they don't figure it out, right? He treats them very well, right? And what happens is, then he seems, initially he accused them of treachery, he put them in jail, he took them out and said, I'm afraid of the real God, I can't do this. And he basically takes, right, he gives them what they need in terms of provisions for the way back, and he puts their money back into their bags, right? And it says they go to the inn where they stopped, or wherever they stopped along the way. They see the money and they're petrified. They go back to Yaakov. Oh, okay. And in the midst, right, what happens is that Yosef wants to know if they're telling the truth, so to speak. And he says to them, okay, I'm not letting you all go home. Shimon is going into jail because he knew Shimon and Levi together could probably knock out all of Mitzrayim. He had to divide them. And he says, if you bring your baby brother down to me, right, you can come back. We know that Yaakov initially refuses, right? First Reuven tries to convince him, right? And then finally Yehuda takes total responsibility that if Binyamin comes down, then they'll go, otherwise they can't. And it says the famine's getting worse and worse, and Yaakov's got at his wit's end. I've lost Yosef. Shimon's been captured. Do I let Binyamin go or not? And he has to finally let Binyamin go, because otherwise there'll be no more food, no more grain. Yo, Binyamin comes down to Mitzrayim, and as soon as he sees Binyamin, he basically cries. He hasn't seen his brother in so long. He brings back Shimon, and they all have dinner one night. And it says at dinner, he pairs them according to their mothers. And he says to Binyamin, I want you to sit next to me. And it says he has a conversation with Binyamin. And he says, Binyamin, do you have any idea where Yosef is? And Binyamin, with Ruach HaKodesh, says, you're Yosef. And he says, don't tell anyone. He says, I'm going to do something, right?
Play along.
So Binyamin is one of the pawns in this story. We know they take Yosef's. As they're going back, they take Yosef's special cup. They put it in Binyamin's sack. They let them go. Then he sends Menashe back to capture them, right? And as they come back, they say, we're being punished for what we did to Yosef. We deserve this. God is taking appropriate action. And he's devastated again. Yosef keeps going in to cry on his own. And finally, right, they're brought back to him, and there's going to be a confrontation. The brothers are going to have to contend for Binyamin, because Yosef's proposal is very simply this: I'll tell you what, Binyamin stole my cup, I'll keep him as a slave. Go home, Shalom Alecha. Tell Yaakov Avinu that his little son was a crook, and they know this is not going to happen. And they all say to Yehuda, he's the viceroy. You're the future Melech Yisroel. Malchus is yours. You are, and also you're the one who guaranteed the safety of Binyamin. Therefore, the task is yours. We will stand back and allow you to intercede, to go through a period of negotiation with the viceroy, and that's where our parsha ends.